you know, the thing about interviews like this, it's, you know, it's a mutual, you know, it's an exchange. And so I felt like I didn't do really well. And I was also, yeah, there was so many things happening. It was kind of hard to focus. Okay, are we okay?
We are rolling, yes.
Okay, we are rolling. So I'm just going to keep on talking. And hopefully this will work. Okay. Beginning in the 1990s, China replaced South Korea as the leading sending country of Asian adoptive children to the United States. The Chinese government passed an adoption law in 1992, enabling foreigners to adopt Chinese children. The adoption law also made more transparent adoption regulations for foreign adoptive parents wanting to adopt children in China. In recent years, approximately 5,000 children from China have been adopted annually by American adoptive parents. In recent years, 5,000 Chinese children approximately, okay, wait, let me restate. let's see, how should I, because it's an annual estimate. So how should I state that? In recent years, right, every year it's about 5,000. That's the recent statistic. Right. But China is definitely on top in terms of, a sending country of adoption. Beginning in the 1980s, the Chinese government implemented population control policies penalizing families that had more than one children. As a result of these policies, many Chinese female infants were abandoned or placed in orphanages to comply with the policies. Chinese male heirs were considered more valuable than Chinese female infants. To my knowledge, it's still happening to me. Yeah. I haven't heard about that. I hope I'm not wrong about that. About the one child, because to my knowledge, it's still, yeah, okay. Because the history of Korean overseas adoption in the United States is much longer compared to the history of the adoption of Vietnamese and Chinese children, for example, there are now generations of Korean adoptees who have come of age, who are now adult adoptees, and we are learning from their experiences that they have been talking about in documentaries, in memoirs, in anthologies of writing by and about Korean adoptees, and in organizations formed by and for Korean adoptees. Some of these experiences are negative ones and revolve around issues of racial and ethnic identity. In a groundbreaking anthology of Korean writing by and about Korean adoptees specifically called Seeds from a Silent Tree, edited by Tanya Bischoff and Joe Rankin. Some of the Korean adoptee writers in this anthology talked about their experiences of being in white American adoptive families, of being raised as a white child, but then looking at a mirror or looking at a photograph and dealing with the stark physical differences between themselves and their adoptive parents and other adoptive relatives. Some of them experienced racial taunting from white children at school. Some of them experienced racial taunting from some relatives in their adoptive families. Also, they experienced at times disdain or alienation from Korean Americans who were not adoptees. So they felt alienation regarding a combination of, one, their racial identities being racialized as Asian or specifically Korean in the United States, but having a very different kind of upbringing in a white family. Other problems include, for some of them who, beginning in the 1980s, returned to Korea to visit their countries of origin, and also for some to attempt to reunite with their birth families in Korea. Now, some of those experiences have also been difficult. For those Korean adoptees who were able to reunite with their birth families, while some of these experiences were positive, many of them were also difficult. A number of adult Korean adoptees wrote about these experiences and pointed out the frustration felt by not being able to speak Korean, by not being able to communicate with their own birth parents and siblings. Am I bringing up? I don't know if that's not the direction you wanted me to go. Okay. Well, let me, you know, I have to be honest. I don't know if I can really, okay. Let me think about how I want to phrase that. Right, right. Right. Yeah, let me think about how I want to. Is it okay if I refer to something specific? Or, like, for example, you know, the experience of, you know, there's that very famous documentary, Daughter from Da Nang, right? I mean, yeah, actually, you know, my husband and I are writing a critical piece about that. There's a lot of that's what we're kind of writing about. But I guess, so I don't know, maybe I shouldn't like talk about that. Just reaffirm. Let me think about how I just want to rephrase it, because in some ways I think it's similar, very similar. And I was thinking about her story. Okay, let me just say this. Okay. We are also learning from Vietnamese adoptees that some of the struggles that they're facing are similar to those faced by previous generations of Asian and specifically Korean adoptees. That is, being racialized as Asian, but being placed and then raised in white adoptive families. At times, their families have not acknowledged their Asian ancestries, their Asian origins, and have compelled them, for example, to assimilate to white American culture. I don't know if that's okay, but one of the things that is happening specifically in the Korean adoptee community is that because there is a longer history of Korean adoption in the United States, there are now significant numbers of adult Korean adoptees who are mentoring younger Asian adoptees. Adult Korean adoptees are forming organizations or playing major roles in organizations that focus on Korean adoptee issues or international adoption issues more broadly. So, for example, there are organizations such as Also Known As, in which adult Korean adoptees are very involved in on the East Coast. And this organization has a mentorship program that enables adult Korean adoptees to meet with younger Asian and other international adoptees. On the West Coast, there are organizations such as Association for Korean Adoptees, which have similar mentorship programs. What is similar about these programs and important about them is that they enable adoptees of different generations to come together, to inform especially the younger Asian adoptees that they are not alone in this particular upbringing. They are not alone in their particular experience of international adoption. There is much more knowledge about the challenges and problems faced by Asian adoptive children, as well as the challenges faced by adoptive families in the United States. Some of these changes have taken place in part because there are now adult Asian adoptees who are able to reflect upon and who are talking more openly about some of the problems that they faced being raised as Asian adoptees in primarily white adoptive families in the United States. Also, changes in adoptive family practices in the United States regarding adoptive families who have adopted internationally are also changing because of changing attitudes in the United States over time about immigration and assimilation. In the 1950s, 1960s, and 1970s, the notion of assimilation, that raising an international adoptive child, and specifically an Asian adoptive child in a white family, meant that that child should be part of a particular American identity and should leave their origins, their Asian origins, behind. And starting in the late 1970s, the 1980s, there were changes in attitudes in the United States as a whole about multiculturalism, more of a celebration of multicultural identity. So that change of embracing or even celebrating diverse origins and diverse cultures, combined with the knowledge imparted by adult Korean adoptees of the difficulties that Asian adoptive children face when their Asian heritage is dismissed or unacknowledged or at worst even ridiculed, has made changes in current international adoptive practices here in the United States. An example of this change would be, for example, current... Okay. All right. I think this is what Maya was talking... Okay. I'm sorry. Let me backtrack. We were talking about an example, right? An example of some of these changes regarding the adoption of Asian children in the United States is a change regarding attitudes towards the child's Asian origins. So, for example, today the leading sending country of adoptive children to the United States is China. And there are both white as well as Chinese American families adopting children from China. Some of these adoptive parents have no knowledge of Chinese language, but they're very interested and committed to maintaining Chinese culture, for example, the knowledge of Chinese language, in their adoptive children. I think I should also add that some of these changes also have to do with Chinese government policy. Chinese government policy also wants adoptive families from overseas to maintain a Chinese cultural identity and heritage for their adoptive children. Yeah, it works both ways. I was thinking, yeah, I ought to mention that too. Although it's hard to enforce that. Right. And then you're expected, I think, even to sign like a... Right. Good question. That's a great question. International adoption is definitely changing the landscape of American life. It's definitely changing the ways we think about race and ethnicity in the United States. there's a very visible presence of international and transracial adoptive families in communities across the United States, from the West Coast to the Midwest to the South to the East Coast. And I think one of the changes that this is bringing to the United States is a change in the way we think about race from the 1960s and 1970s. And that is the way we sometimes think of race in terms of racial categories, traditional racial categories such as African American, Asian American, Native American, and so on. International adoption from Asia, because it is practiced historically primarily by white adoptive families, has become a new and very visible form of race mixture, a new form of hybridity in which white families, for example, with no biological Asian background, are incorporating Asian children into the very intimate space of the family. And the Asian child is transformed by that upbringing, but so are the adoptive families. It is at the very top. Yeah, no, I know you mentioned this as a topic, and I was thinking about it. My feeling, I'll tell you just what my feeling is, that, my feeling about the future of international, transnational adoption is that international adoption is a process that is going to continue in the new millennium. It was a phenomenon that became more significant and more visible after World War II, and it has become institutionalized in ways that will continue to facilitate this phenomenon for decades and perhaps even beyond to come. So, for example, Asian countries, I believe, will continue to play an integral role in this phenomenon. Although China is currently the leading sending country of Asian adoptive children to the United States, and South Korea has sent less adoptive children, we are also starting to see other Asian countries, the Philippines and India, for example, participate in this phenomenon. Asian governments of other Asian countries are streamlining their international adoption regulations to facilitate international adoption. Poverty, social upheaval in Asian countries continue to occur, and they continue to inform this phenomenon.